Well, let's get out to the Band of Brothers hotline and bring in our special guest for the 5 o'clock segment. Like I said before, he's the National Director of Recruiting for Scout.com. We've had him on before. He does a tremendous job. This guy's always on the grind watching film after film, huddle film after huddle film, going out to all these different schools, finding the best prospects, and keeping us updated on all their offers. Brandon Huffman, how you living, Brandon?
Hey, I like that introduction. I hope my wife is listening because then she knows what I'm actually doing all day.
Yeah, she thinks you're just playing all the time. She don't think you're really working. Oh, you're hanging out with football players. You're hanging out with coaches. That sounds like fun. Come home and put the kids to bed, right?
That sounds like every conversation we have. Oh, you're going to watch football. You're not working.
Brandon, you do a tremendous job.
Just don't understand sometimes. They just don't understand.
They just don't get it, man. They don't get it.
And they don't.
You know, and you're doing something. The reason why, I mean, I can sense that you love what you do by the product that you put out there, Brandon, and how hard you work at it. I can understand why you enjoy it because you're dealing with these young men, and their lives are changed in an instant when they receive a scholarship offer to improve their future, get an education, and maybe even develop into a potential NFL football player at their respective school. Tell us why you got into what you do and why you're doing it now.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, yeah, I grew up going to college football games. It was big. I played high school football. I was lightly recruited. There wasn't a huge market for 6'1", 220-pound tight ends back in the day. And there was just something that I always enjoyed doing. I loved watching high school football. I loved college football. And the best match between the two was recruiting. And it was evaluating and analysis and getting to go to high school games and covering high school games. And I was a college student as a newspaper writer. And just kind of, you know, the internet took off right at the right time. And I got into it right at the right time. And it really has gone from what was originally a hobby and just something that I was doing for fun to, you know, career and a means to provide for the family. But, you know, it's not just obviously my family that I'm providing for it. It's the opportunity to help these guys that have a chance to be very good college football players and potentially NFL players realize their dream of getting to play major college football. And, you know, you talked about how it changes so many of these guys' lives. I got an email from a friend of mine yesterday who I've known for like 7-8 years, and I remember him telling me about his son as a fourth and fifth grade. And I always take those conversations with a huge grain of salt, but he was a big kid, and even then, and he got his first offer yesterday from Fresno State. And, you know, getting that email from his dad, I can sense that email was probably the happiest email he's ever sent. And, you know, whether it's these kids that are getting them offers from the top 5, top 20, the FBS powerhouses, the teams that are playing for national championships, or schools that are barely scraping by to provide a college tuition and to even field a competitive team, there's still nothing like that first offer that these kids get. And, you know, just being even, just getting to write about these guys, getting a chance to realize their dream is pretty exciting. And I do really enjoy it. I do love what I get to do for a living.
Brandon, you talk about loving it. You mentioned in there that you got into it at the right time, right as the internet was starting to explode and as recruiting started to explode. It seemed like those two things kind of went hand in hand. But how has the internet changed recruiting over the last few years since you've been in it, since it's really blown up? How has it changed from when you started following it, you started doing it, to where it is now?
Well, you know, obviously so much has changed with the advent of Twitter. I think with the internet sites, you know, there's another checks and balances now that didn't exist before. Whereas maybe a college coach 10 years ago would just say, hey, you know, you're the only quarterback we're recruiting. You can get away with it. Coaches, we tell them to that all the time and the recruits can believe it. Well, now they can't say that because there's 900 kids that are quoted as saying when they took their unofficial visit, yeah, Coach so-and-so told me that I'm the only quarterback they're recruiting, but these kids can now do the math and say, well, he's telling them that, he's telling me that. I'm not sure that's a school I want to go to. So, you know, the checks and balances system that didn't exist 10, 15 years ago has really enabled that to happen. Now kids are able to see these guys and read about them and see where they really stand on the board. They're reading where a kid may be leaning. They're now able to see, okay, well, I really like this school, but they've got 4 receivers committed and 3 other guys really like them. They can now have that information readily available for them. You know, with Twitter really taking over the last couple of years, where before we would be the guys that would call a kid and, you know, interview him about the recruiting process, interview him about his offers, find out who's top five listed, find out how his official visits went. Now they're live tweeting their entire official visit. You're seeing the cookie cakes that are in their hotel when they get there. You're reading about which party they're going with, which recruits they're staying out with. So there's a lot of things now that by the time you get to that interview on Sunday, rest of America has already been reading about it if they follow this kid on Twitter the previous 48 hours. So there's just so much more information available now. You can't hide anything if you're a coach. You can't hide anything if you're a recruit. And now more eyes are watching.
Brennan Huffman from Scout.com on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. Yeah, I have to wonder, about the future of recruiting, how it will continue to change. I feel like as in your position, I feel like you kind of keep checks and balances for everybody, all these coaches that are able to offer. There's no longer that under-the-radar guy, right? Because you're in these guys' houses. You're talking to their parents. They want to get the word out. They want to talk to you so that everybody knows, hey, you know, I got an offer. There are checks and balances here, and you provide that.
There's no question. And the funny thing is now is we'll write about a kid, and maybe I'll tweet about a kid in an event, and he's only got one offer. He's got no offers, and this one school thinks that, you know, they're keeping him under the radar. I'll get a text from a coach or a direct message on Twitter or even a call saying, Huffman, do not write about that kid. We don't want anybody to know about it. I mean, the reality is they do it 90% in jest and 10% in the hopes that you don't write about it because it might be a kid that they thought they were going to be able to surprise people with, and now the secret's out, and now nobody is going to be able to say that they didn't know about this kid because he blows up an event, he's got a couple people writing about it, and now other coaches, maybe somebody else is doing the heavy lifting, the hard homework. The other coaches are now seeing this name and thinking they better go keep the tires themselves. So, you know, coaches get scared a lot when there's an event, when their guys go to an event, especially for Mountain West school, because a kid that they may think is going to be a steal for them, now a Pac-12 school is going to come in. Somebody else did the evaluations first. Now the Pac-12 school can come in and say, okay, he's a Division I player. He's got the offers. Now we'll offer him and we're in the mix because we're a Pac-12 school. So you see that happen a lot. You know, coaches can't tell kids anymore, hey, you're the only guy we're taking this position, when they're telling five other guys that because these kids can read it. So, you know, whether it's intentionally or unintentionally, we're keeping recruits and we're keeping coaches accountable. And that's just kind of the way it is now with coaching having to change their pitches to recruits. Now recruits can really read everything that they're being told and what other recruits are being told.
Brandon, do kids really fall through the cracks anymore? You talk about all of this, and I think about the internet. I think, in my mind, if a kid really is good enough to be recruited, to go play college football, and if they have just the right tools, they are going to get seen. Do you say that's a fair statement?
Yeah, that is. I mean, to make it a little bit more in the context for local, to where you guys are. Look at a guy like Porter Gustin a year ago. I mean, he fell into the cracks and still was getting offers 10 months before signing day. He had fallen into the cracks for most of his junior year and into the spring because he was originally from Idaho and then he was in Salem Hills and not at one of the traditional powers in Utah. But he fell through the cracks, but now it's a matter of the timing context. Falling through the cracks 10 months before signing day is, nowadays, that's considered you're a late bloomer, but he still had 10 months to get 40-plus offers and from some of the big boys in all of college football. It just, nowadays with huddle, there's the advantage to huddle is that nobody falls through the cracks. The disadvantage to huddle is that every kid now has a highlight film. It used to be 5-7 years ago when you had to have a DVD of your highlights. The coaches were only going to make highlight films for the guys that they really truly felt were Division I prospects. Now every kid from the third string backup long snapper to the starting quarterback has the ability to make their own highlight tape, to make their own huddle. So every kid has a highlight tape, and every kid that's got an email address is probably sending said highlight tape to coaches. And so the ability to fall through the cracks just doesn't exist anymore. Even when a school like New Mexico is having two or three guys getting recruited and offered by the big boys, and you have a school like Pocatello, Idaho last year with Tristan Hodge, ends up being a top 100 kid who goes to Notre Dame, the day and age of sneaking guys through, they're non-existent unless the kid completely takes himself off the grid. And around teenagers much, most of those teenagers don't want to take themselves off the grid and take themselves off of social media.
Brandon, give us an update on BYU's recruiting. What do you know about it? Who are they targeting? Who do they have a good chance of grabbing here?
Well, obviously, they've got a couple of early commits and guys that I really do like. You know, I got the chance to see Aliva Hipa a little bit earlier at the Los Angeles Nike camp. And, you know, he's a guy a little bit different than his brother physically, probably a better athlete than he is, but obviously smaller. Salepa Puna, another kid that I like. You know, he's going to develop physically and I think has a chance to be a very good player. And then you get a guy like Jaren Hall, who he commits early in the process. I think October of his junior year when a quarterback commits that early, that's another thing that coaches have to worry about, that what's going to happen when the screen comes around and the evaluation period comes and coaches that need a quarterback come to watch him throw. Jaren Hall stayed pretty steadfast in his commitment to BYU. I got a chance to see him in March at the Las Vegas 7-on-7 and really love the way he throws the ball. So from their commits, they got some guys that I really do like. And then obviously they're targeting some key guys. Timmy Fehoko is one of the guys that they're heavily going after. I think, you know, one of the things that hurts BYU and Utah to an extent this year is that a lot of the in-state kids that historically BYU and Utah probably would have gotten, they're a lot more enamored by the schools outside the state. And, you know, they could probably thank Osama Sina and Porter Gustin for that. Those guys, I think, have made it a little bit more cool to lead, if you will, to lead the state. But a kid that I just talked to this week, Max Tupai, from Murray High School, a school that doesn't get a lot of guys recruited, he's still high on BYU. Then today they offer a 2017 kid from Provo High School, Ty Jones, who I also saw in Vegas in March playing. In fact, he was Jaren Hall's favorite receiver at that event. Big 6'4", 6'5", receiver, a little bit on the lankier side, but room to go. So it's going to be a great in-state class in 2017 in top-end talent and depth. So I think they're going to continue to really push forward in the 2016 class, but they've been really aggressive early on in that 2017 class in-state as well.
When you look back at the last 2-3 years of BYU recruiting, do you think that they at any point were a dark horse for a particular recruit or for, you know, give me some examples maybe, and they actually surprised you that they got this particular recruit going against maybe some bigger names? What were those examples?
Fred Warner is the first one that comes to mind. Yeah, they got on him early and then held off some schools that typically don't lose recruiting battles down the stretch, and that was Oregon and that was USC. Now, the flip side to Fred Warner's emergence is that 2 years later, his brother Troy became a much heavier recruited player early on, and Oregon offered him. BYU was the first school to offer Troy. They had talked about playing together, and then Oregon offered Troy. He's going there, but in the case of Fred, I mean, he was a relative under-the-radar guy early on in the process. BYU got on him very early. He ended up, I think, the number 5 outside linebacker in the Western's class, a top 300 player, and it wasn't so much that they surprised getting him early on, because at the time, he didn't have a lot of people after him. It was that they held on to him when so many other schools were coming after him down the stretch. When USC goes after a kid, especially a kid in Southern California, more often than not, USC pulls that kid in. And so that was obviously a big pickup for them. Probably another kid that I really liked in that same class that, you know, I thought that other schools would have a chance to come in and take was Tika Fuga out of Edison High School in Huntington Beach, another program that's put out a lot of players. And it's the only Taki Taki. There's two or three guys in that class that I really liked that I thought, you know, other schools were going to make a big push for, and they did, but BYU either got their commitment early and held on or got them late. And then, of course, Devon Blackman out of Riverside College, who was an Oregon bounce back, another kid. He seemed like he was headed to Fresno State, which gets a lot of BYU bounce backs, but he ended up at BYU. And so I think, you know, he's had obviously an up and down career at BYU, but just from a recruiting standpoint, I think it showed again that BYU does such a good job of getting on guys early, and for the most part, they hold on to those guys.
Brandon Huffman from Scout.com on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. Brandon, do you remember Tanner Mangum when he was coming out of Idaho, and he just got back from a mission? He's slated as the backup quarterback behind Taysom Hill. But reflect with me for a moment what his recruiting process was like, what you thought of him when he was going through the Elite 11 and the Under Armour All-American game. How excited should BYU fans be about Tanner Mangum?
Thrilled. And it's funny, I was just talking about Tanner Mangum yesterday. We had all the recruiting managers together, and Greg Biggins, who covers the West with me, was a part of student sports when they put the very first opening on, and Tanner Mangum was in that, and that was really his coming out party. It was at that event that we realized that he wasn't some novelty from Idaho, but that he was one of the top quarterbacks in the country. He took his team to the 7-on-7 championship game in that tournament and really cemented himself as a top guy in that class. I think he ended up being a top 10 quarterback in the region, an Under Armour All-American, committed early to BYU, and they held on. And, you know, at that time, Arkansas still had Bobby Petrino as their head coach. And, you know, Bobby Petrino was one of the most well-thought-of quarterback evaluators and developers in all of college football. Obviously, Boise State was after him. Utah liked him, or the state liked him. There were other schools that were coming after him, even after that commitment to BYU. And I remember watching a lot of his film, and, you know, there was the obvious comparison to Caleb Kelly because he played at Edo High School as well. But he was a different quarterback than Caleb Kelly. Where Caleb Kelly was dangerous over his leg, Mangum was the kid that was dangerous in the pocket. Drop him back, let him pick you apart, and he would. And watching him that entire week at the opening and then at the Elite 11, you could see a quarterback that it didn't matter if he was from Eagle, Idaho. This kid had been playing in Los Angeles, in Dallas, in Chicago, wherever it may be. He was a big-time quarterback. And so to get him to come back and to now have him in there to compete for the starting job these next couple of years, that's a huge boon for BYU because Tanner Mangum is an extreme talent.
What do you think makes Tanner Mangum different than some other big-time recruits? I guess BYU has had some success with a bigger recruit in Taysom Hill lately turning out, but they had the Jake Heaps disappointment, who was a very highly touted recruit, and some people around here fear that Tanner's that he will be that. What would you say that makes him different that you don't see him fizzling out or kind of being a flop?
I think it's just kind of his mental makeup. You know, one of the things that the opening does provide a lot of these kids is you get a very diverse group of guys that are coming from all over the country. And, you know, a lot of guys, Luke Tanner is kind of a quiet guy and, you know, thought that he might be, maybe didn't have the outspokenness, maybe the leadership quality because he was so quiet. And I watched a very talented team that he played with. There are some guys that were drafted into the NFL in this last draft that came out as true juniors that were on that team. And they would stop and they would listen to Tanner, and just he had this cool and calmness to him where a lot of quarterbacks have some arrogance to them. They have almost this false bravado, this false confidence. With Tanner, you didn't see that at all. You saw a guy who was much more even chilled, who knew the pressure was on in those games. And granted, it was 7-on-7, so there wasn't like that much pressure, but he didn't get rattled. He was just a very, you know, focused guy who could have some fun, could smile, didn't take himself too seriously, but when he got down to football, that's when it was his time to turn it on, and he didn't. So I think they're going to have a guy who, I think maybe being away from the game for a couple of years too, is going to kind of renew that passion and love for football that he had. But I think that you have a guy who is just kind of you command a leadership. He commands a presence when others are around him, and I think that's a BYU fan to have to look forward to.
Brandon Huffman from Scout.com, the National Director of Recruiting, on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. BYU just had their junior day down in Provo. How have junior days affected recruiting? How much do they really matter? How important are they in the recruiting process? I mean, it's not like they have pads on. You're seeing the athlete, but how effective are these junior days in your opinion?
I mean, for guys that are out of state, for guys that aren't from Utah, for whatever school you may be, if they're not local kids, if they come on their own dime, then I think that shows that those kids are interested in your program. I think that the one danger, and I've heard coaches tell me this for years, the one danger with doing junior days is, especially when you open it up to a bigger audience, and maybe instead of just focusing on 10, 15 kids, and you open it up to 60 or 70 kids, well, you still can only sign 25 kids. There's going to be 30, 40 kids that are at your junior day that you're not going to recruit that heavily, that you're not going to offer. And coaches always say that when you have the bigger junior days, the kids and their parents who don't need you alone are the kids you've never been to recruit, and the kids that you really do want, the kids that you're really targeting, are the ones you never had a chance to get to because you're in a verbal headlock by the kids and the parents that you don't want to talk to. So you've seen a lot of schools that still do big junior days, whether it's coinciding with a spring game, whether it's coinciding with a big basketball game during February and March, whether it's coinciding with some other kind of big event. You're still seeing some schools that are doing bigger junior days, but you're also seeing other schools that are maybe doing a number of smaller junior days. They're bringing in 5 to 7 guys, and that way the 10 coaches on the staff can have a little bit more one-on-one time with the kid rather than trying to get 5 minutes of face time with each kid and never really get to go in depth. And so I think, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag. I think you want the kids on campus, whether they're there with a small group, whether they're there with a big group, but the bigger group does kind of inhibit what you can do and how much time you can spend with the guys you truly want. But I think you're going to still see schools do junior days because there's no other chance to get those kids on campus all in one big group other than junior days, maybe during spring football. But I think coaches still like it because it does give them a chance to knock out a bunch of tours and a bunch of meetings with kids all in one fell swoop. But I think you're going to just continue to see more and more schools kind of focus on the smaller junior days so they can put more time in with the guys.
Nobody does it better. No one does it with more fervor. Brandon Huffman, the National Director of Recruiting for Scout.com, we appreciate you hopping on with us. I know this is the busiest, probably one of the busiest times of the year for you. You're always busy, though, because recruiting never ends. It never stops. But we appreciate you coming on with us and spending a few moments and enlightening us with all that information. Thank you.
I appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks, Brandon. There you have it, Brandon Huffman.